Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning. And as we do every Friday morning at 7 o'clock, we welcome in our friend Jared Stillman to the program. Jared, fresh on what I believe is a three-game losing streak in the Jared versus Joe competition. Jared, good morning. How are you?
It's good. You know, it's really disappointing. I feel like the Titans at the end of the year, the seven-game losing streak. But maybe people will treat me the same way they treat Mike Vrabel, which is they will give me no blame for my own losing streak.
Very well said. So, Jared, I want you to put yourself in a time machine, and I want you to take yourself back to last Friday and compare how you feel about the trajectory of the Nashville Predators franchise then to how you feel about it now, a week later, as the NHL trade deadline approaches today. What's the difference in terms of how you view this?
Let me tell you something. I love my team again. It is so amazing. It's so refreshing. It's such an exciting feeling because I have been so at odds with the Predators' decisions about their teams for like the last 3 years. I mean, I remember at the trade deadline in 2020 when I had kind of given up on that season and Craig Smith was a pending UFA and Mikhail Granlund was a pending UFA. And I was like, get rid of those guys and get some picks. And they were, oh, no, we want to try to make a run at it. And I remember in 21, I was like, get rid of Eric Halla and get rid of Mikhail Granlund and get rid of these pending UFAs. No, we want to try to make a run at it. And then last year they traded a second-round pick for Jeremy Lausanne, and I about threw a chair out the window. And so this year had been like the constant disagreement, right? They get smoked by Colorado in the playoffs, and everybody's like, all right, time to restart. And they're like, no, you know, we think we can compete. And then every freaking loss and every Tuesday on this program with David Poile, it was like just chasing after something that we all knew this team wasn't. And it was like, oh, my God, stop the madness. Then all of a sudden, and it's not just like the excuse making or it's the little things like, why is Philip Tomasino in Milwaukee? Or why are they releasing Eli Tolvanen for nothing? And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, bam, they trade Nino Niederreiter. Bam, David Poile retires. Bam, they make the move on Tanner Jeannot. The Ekholm trade was a decent trade for the Predators. It wasn't a great trade for the Predators. Then they trade Mikhail Granlund. Now, I can't believe somebody was stupid enough to do that, but the fact that they were, I love the direction of the team. I enjoy watching the team. I enjoy rooting for the team. I think that the team is setting themselves up for the future in a kind of variety of ways. I would tell you, from Friday to Friday, I feel much different about my hockey team. I am very excited, and I renewed my tickets last night. I am very excited about the future of the Nashville Predators.
Good God. Jared S. and Jeff D., both of them just complete
people renewing tickets left and right, baby.
So two things on that, Jared. One, what's your confidence level that long-term, big picture, Barry Trotz will be an effective, successful GM? And two, would you rather see the Preds try to now parlay this into an off-season, you know, buy fest and try to just reform a good team, or would you rather see some pain and some go with the young guys and some patience and more of a rebuild-like approach?
So I don't think unless they trade the goalie that we're ever going to see like a true rebuild from the Predators. I was talking to Hal Gill about this on the show yesterday. As long as you've got Josi, Forsberg, and Saros, like you're not going to stink. You're not going to be Chicago. You're not going to be Arizona. Like you're not going to be that bad. Now, you may not be great, but you're not going to be that bad. My gut is maybe they trade Fabbro today, maybe they trade Lankinen today, but I think for the most part, outside of those little minor moves, they're kind of done. So I look at next year's team like Josi, McDonough, Forsberg, Duchesne, Tomasino, Evangelista. They'll re-sign Carrier, even though he's really not that good and he never stays healthy. So we have a pretty good idea of what the team's going to be as they approach the offseason. They've cleared up all this cap space, especially by getting rid of that albatross of a contract that was Granlund's. And so they'll have some space, but there may not be something out there that's great. I think that Barry's in a good position to where if he wants to strike on something, if there's a guy who's unhappy, if there's a guy who wants a new deal and a team won't give it to him, and he thinks that they can get it here, I think the Predators will have some cap space to operate this offseason. But they don't have to do anything because they can go into next season and say, okay, we're going to continue to develop the younger guys, and we want to see Evangelista play, and we want to see Tomasino play, and we want to see all these young guys, you know, whoever's down there in Milwaukee or whatever play. And then if the team's decent, which I think they probably will be because I think there will be a coaching change, and I think the team will be better with a new coach, then at the deadline, one of the benefits of not having all 2023 picks is that if the Predators do want to make moves next year, if they are good next year, which I'm not anticipating, but I'm not ruling out either, then they have the ammunition to be able to go get players at the deadline next year as a buyer or sell off players like a McDonough or something like that at the deadline as a seller next year. So I really like the situation they're in.
Jared, if you're the Titans, if you're Rand Carthon, Mike Vrabel, what is your plan to address the quarterback position in the future? We've heard Joe's plan at some point, whether it's now or a year down the road, 2 years down the road, whenever it is, you got to do it. You got to address the quarterback of the future. What is your plan to address the quarterback position moving forward if you're the Titans?
Well, I mean, I think Joe's decision to give Chicago everything to take a little quarterback who's not even 6 foot is wow. But as far as I think what the Titans should do at quarterback, I mean, quite frankly, I think long-term vision, unless they're convinced that they can move up and get Anthony Richardson and develop him, which if Kyle Shanahan was the coach, I would feel much better about, or if Sean McVay was the coach, I would feel much better about. I don't trust Vrabel and the offensive coaches, but they trust themselves, I guess. I think the Titans know that at some point they're going to have to make a decision on the future at the quarterback spot. But I kept saying this last year about the quarterbacks in the draft, the Kenny Picketts, the Malik Willises, the guys that we now know deep down inside aren't very good. And I kept saying, are these guys better than Jared Goff? Are these guys ever going to be better than Jared Goff? And if the answer is no, then don't draft them. And so if you don't think that Will Levis is going to be better than Jared Goff, or if you don't think that Anthony Richardson is going to be better than Jared Goff and you can't get to Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud, then I would keep using that approach every time a young quarterback becomes available, because at the end of the day, as far as the league's concerned, like, you can't go chasing after a young quarterback when you've got a veteran team. So I understand the sentiment that the Titans, with Vrabel as the coach and Tannehill as the quarterback, will never be bad, but I can't go chasing after a quarterback because I'm going to need one down the road. If there's not a quarterback there that can be your franchise guy, then you're just wasting a pick and wasting everybody's developmental time. So I'm not saying that they should wait till they totally bomb out like Vince Young throwing his pads in the stands and then they drafted Jake Locker, but I do believe that just because Tannehill's older doesn't mean that they can't move off of Tannehill and on to another veteran-ish quarterback down the road. It's not ideal.
Sounds like Chris Ballard.
It's not ideal, but it's also, again, they have Vrabel as the coach. And if Vrabel was coaching the Indianapolis Colts, then I would feel a lot better about their win-loss records. But at some point, I mean, I think that the Titans have to let it come to them more so than go after it if they don't think that superstar is there.
Yeah, you can't go get a young quarterback with a veteran team like the Chiefs did, say, in 2017 draft. So, Jared, if you're so down on Vrabel, like Vrabel's a coach, they can't develop a quarterback, why do you want Vrabel as your coach?
Like, he's a great coach.
I don't think – are you a great – if it's as bad as you say it is in terms of, like, they can't develop a quarterback, it's not McVay, it's not Shanahan – why do you think you're ever going to win a Super Bowl with that coach?
Doesn't every coach have their strengths and weaknesses like a player?
Well, some coaches have a defensive background and some have an offensive background, but you also are allowed to have assistant coaches who do things like work with your quarterbacks.
Right. So here's the thing about Vrabel. Like, Tim Kelly could be a great assistant coach. I don't know. But it doesn't matter if he's a great assistant coach or not. Vrabel has no way to figure that out. Vrabel's just taking shots in the dark with these offensive coaches.
Vrabel has no way to figure that out?
Vrabel has no way. Vrabel does not know a good assistant coach on offense. He doesn't know.
But I mean, you do. But Jared does. Oh, this is fascinating.
Well,
this,
I mean,
a little glimpse into your brain. This is amazing.
Let's go through the history, right? I mean, so he hires Matt LaFleur, and I felt like that was kind of more of a John Robinson thing than a Vrabel thing, but
yes,
it was technically under his watch. And LaFleur was terrible. I mean, LaFleur was terrible
did
as
you,
the offensive
did
coordinator
you know,
of the
Did you know who, and I understand the connection here, but you know who Vrabel wanted to hire? It was Ryan Day. Pretty good,
sure,
offensive coordinator, pretty good developer, quarterback, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so I guess it's just blind luck?
Okay, so then he promotes Arthur Smith.
That was pretty good.
Arthur Smith was a fabulous offensive coordinator. Then he promotes Todd Downing, who was an absolutely abhorrent
after trying to hire Tim Kelly.
You don't get points for trying, Joe.
But the point is, I think he might know his head from his elbow, dude. Like, what
I mean,
are you talking about?
When you have a bad defensive coordinator, and it's like, well, I mean, they tried to hire Bill Walsh, and he didn't want to come.
You're
is that
saying,
what we're going to say if Tim Kelly stinks? Is we're going to say they tried to hire Matt Nagy.
No, they tried to hire
Eric Bieniemy. They tried, Joe.
Yeah, just scream into your microphone. You are saying that he can't evaluate. Like, I'm saying, here's someone, this is who he targeted. You're saying he doesn't know. He doesn't know what a good assistant is. Look, Todd Downing
offensive
is a mistake.
Assistant.
Okay. Todd Downing
The bigger mistake with Downing
but
wasn't
coaches
making
make
him
mistakes.
The offensive coordinator.
Ten
it was
years
bringing
from
him
now,
back.
That's fine. 10 years from now, Vrabel will have made more mistakes. But for you to broad brush this and say, well, he knows those linebacker coaches, but you can't expect him to know what a good offensive coach would be, is so asinine.
But it's true.
No, it's not true. It's stupid.
Yes, it is. Why did he bring back Todd Downing?
I think because he liked Todd Downing and thought he did a pretty good job.
Because he thought Todd Downing was a good coach, and Todd Downing is not a good coach.
And you also.
And so that's my
right,
point.
And you Braden also.
Doesn't
right,
know.
But again, oh my God. But again,
so when it comes
you
to
are
Andy
one
Reed,
of the people, and you fall into the category. You're the one that you want so badly for all of the crap last year to be on Downing. It makes it much easier, right? It was all Downing. He's stupid. He doesn't know how to drop a play. He's a terrible coach. That's how you want it to be, because it's
have
much
I ever
easier
said that?
To talk to. Oh, that's basically what you. Yeah, you
have
basically.
Have I ever said that Dennis Daly at left tackle was Todd Downing's fault? Have I ever said
you
Robert Woods
put,
dropping the football was Todd
on,
Downing's fault?
You put
fault?
It way more on Downing.
Have I ever said that Malik Willis starting games, which is completely inexcusable, even after what I saw at training camp, did I ever blame Todd Downing for that?
I don't listen to every word you say, thank God.
Yes, you do. And so you
no,
know
I
that
Believe
I
me.
Did not. So that you know that I did not put that all on Todd Downing. This is not all on Todd Downing.
You
this is
put,
not all on
you
Keith
You want
Carter.
To put it all
but
on
for
Todd
Mike
Downing.
Vrabel, for Mike Vrabel to sit there, this is who Mike Vrabel is. And, again, Vrabel is a great coach, and he has strengths.
A great coach who doesn't
weaknesses.
Have any idea who an offensive assistant he should hire. Great, that sounds great.
I mean, the offensive line was an unmitigated disaster. Vrabel fires the offensive line coach, and then he hires the second assistant and is like, oh, just trust me, I know, just trust me.
Sure, and also they had the best offensive line in football in 2020
and
2019, but okay.
They did not have the best offensive line in football in 2020.
They had pretty much the best offensive line in football before Taylor Lewan tore his ACL. Yes, they did. They made a bunch of bad choices.
Before Taylor Lewan tore his ACL. He tore his ACL like in week four.
No, it wasn't week four. But yes, before he tore his ACL, and even after he tore his ACL in 2020, they had a really good offensive line, which is a part of why they scored 31 points a game and were number two in total offense, number four in scoring offense that year, Jared, because they had good
so
offensive linemen.
So then why
linemen.
They fired Keith Carter, Joe?
That's I. You know what? That's a good question. I think sometimes moves are made that owners have a little say in that a coach maybe doesn't want to happen. That's just a guess.
Then if the owner is affecting the offensive coaching staff, then you should have even less faith in the offensive coaching staff, Joe.
This is weird.
And the
because
ability.
This is also
to
weird
because
you think the Titans are going 15-2 next year. Like I can't keep this all.
I do think the Titans are going to win the AFC South, but yeah. As far as developing a quarterback is concerned. The way that I view teams that are run like the Titans are it's going to be very difficult because the second that let's say the Titans draft a quarterback this year and let's say Anthony Richardson and let's say that Tim Kelly is a great offensive coordinator again, you know, just let's just say it And the Titans end up going from 30th in the league in offense to 7th in the league in offense. And the Titans make it to the divisional round of the AFC Championship game. What happens to Tim Kelly? Immediately, no matter what else happens, he's going to be a head coach next year.
Yeah.
So now Vrabel's going to have to go find a new offensive coordinator. And like I said,
like you said, Vrabel, he doesn't know how to pick him. So
he
doesn't. Screwed. If Tim Kelly does great and then he gets a head coaching job, that won't be good information that Vrabel can pick an OC when he tried to hire him before?
Who's on the coaching staff? Let's see.
Johnny,
Jimmy, Stevie, Hall. Who should I make?
Michelle,
who
hang
should
up
I
on
make
him
as my offensive coordinator?
Just hang up on him.
I just want to point out that Bryce Young has said at the NFL Combine that he's, quote, in the 200-pound range. So I feel way better about Bryce Young now. I hope you do too, Jared.
Is he little not popped on the scale yet?
A little quarterback.
Jared, thanks
for
being
Is he not popped on the scale?
He said he's in the 200-pound range. I don't know if he's popped on the scale or not.
Well, I mean, isn't this the combine? Aren't we supposed to know, like, what he weighs?
I know. I am with you. I'm just saying he says he's in the 200-pound range. That's all I can tell you.
Like, that's like sitting there talking to a college. Like, yeah, I'm in, like, the 25 to 35 ACT range. Put me into school. No. You give us the ACT score. This is the combine. There is no talk about how much you might weigh. Like, how much do you weigh? Get on the scale and then tell it. Like, whatever.
Jared,
like going to the doctor's office. The doctor's sitting there
saying,
Robbie
said,
like,
thanks
all right,
for being with us several
how
times
much
now.
Do you weigh? Oh, I weigh 205, doctor. Okay. No, they make you get on the scale. Cares about Bryce Young saying he's in the 200-ish range. Ridiculous.
Jared, we'll see you next week.
See you guys.
All right. Jared Stillman with us. We'll react to a lot of that coming up next. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I got some tickets to give away to see Luke Combs at Nissan Stadium coming up on April 15th. Be caller number 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Luke Combs at Nissan Stadium coming up on April 15th. 615-737-1025. I didn't see that one going that way.
Well,
with Jared.
I didn't either, but then he'll say something. And I don't know what else to do. You tell me your opinion of his cockamamie take. If you don't believe it's
my favorite,
by all means,
my favorite
weigh in.
Part was the, well, you know, if Tim Kelly and the Titans, I think they're going to win the AFC South, and if they go on to go to the AFC title game and he gets a head coaching job, they'll be right back in there looking for an offensive coach. Like, well, yeah. Wouldn't that mean that he did a pretty good job at that point?
I'm guessing some good work from Tim Kelly would be part of the equation there, but I don't know.
I loved it.
I don't understand. Like, I really, truly, all fun and screaming aside, which I swear I don't want to do, I don't understand what he's trying to say. It doesn't make sense.
Nate on the text line says, Robbie just asks the question and then locks the octagon door and has a round one sign paraded around outside the ring before Joe and Jared argue. I honestly didn't see that one coming today. Sometimes I see it coming.
Like, how is Vrabel, if you actually believe what he believes, then how is Vrabel a great coach? And let me just say, I totally disagree with Jared. I understand that he's not Shanahan. He's not McVay.
Right.
He's not one of those guys. Play calling, offensive background head coach. He's a defensive background head coach, which can still win in this league, last I checked. But if you truly think that Vrabel can't pick offensive coaches, can't put together a situation where a quarterback can be developed, that's his whole thing.
That's the thing.
He loves Anthony Richardson, but nah, don't bring him here because the Titans can't develop a quarterback. How do you figure?
Well, like,
and if you do think that, then why would you want Vrabel to be your coach?
That's the thing. Like, if eventually, I think you, me, Jared, I would hope we would all agree. Like, if the Titans are ever going to win a Super Bowl with Mike Vrabel, it's going to require a quarterback being developed. Like, we've talked about this. Can they win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill? Yeah, like if every single thing on the earth goes right, then yeah, they could probably win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill. Beyond that, it's going to require finding your next quarterback. And I'm with you. Like, if you don't think Vrabel can do that and develop a quarterback, well then, How exactly do you think this is going to end?
He's a great coach, and grind him out some wins, and you know, and motivate, and you know, I mean, like that. You have to be able to do that. And again, I just don't. I think Todd Downing, it's absolutely fair to say, was not a good hire at OC. The point that I made was they inquired about Tim Kelly, they got blocked, which tells me that Tim Kelly was already what Vrabel was looking at. And like I said, when he got hired, had they brought in Tim Kelly at that point, there'd be a totally different feeling about them hiring Tim Kelly as OC because he hadn't been here to be part of a staff that was overseeing a bad offense, which was still more personnel than anything.
What do you think of Bryce Young? This is from John McClain, saying, friend of the show, who says he's, Bryce Young said he's, quote, in the 200-pound range, end quote. What does that mean?
Well,
what is the 200-pound range?
Well, I must say, I agree with Jared on that. Like, they get weighed.
There's a scale there, isn't there, in Indianapolis?
And I didn't think that was one of those. All the players can, of course, decide what drills they will or won't do, but I didn't think that was negotiable. I thought that.
Well, surely that's coming out at some point.
Yeah.
But that's what he said, in the 200-pound range.
Yeah, he just hasn't been weighed yet. Yeah. So, well, someone made the comparison. I think someone said, like, Drew Brees came out, because, again, Drew Brees is absolutely my comp for Bryce Young. I think Drew Brees is, like, 210 or something like that at this point. If Bryce Young is 197, okay. He's still – yeah, you want to be north of 200 play in this league, I would say.
191. Like, what does 200-pound range mean?
I mean, it better at least be 190-something. If you were, like, 188, you can't say 200-pound range.
Yeah, sorry, somebody commented on the McClain tweet. It was like, so above 150, huh? Like, yeah, it's good to know.
Yeah, to me, to say 200-pound range, you probably need to be 195 or more, right?
I mean, I would think so. Like, otherwise, we're doing some stretching here of the 200-pound range.
Yeah, hopefully we'll find that out soon, the actual weight.
Yeah. 615-737-1025. We've got more to get into with the NFL Combine, including some Tennessee Volunteer players that are turning some heads as well. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, some Tennessee Vols turning heads at both the NFL Combine and in the draft community as we take a look at the mock draft season that is well underway in the National Football League. Let's start with the Combine part of this. Byron Young turned a lot of heads yesterday with his 40 time. I think his first time got clocked at 4.51, and then his second time got clocked at 4.48, and the official time came in, it was 4.43, which is the same time that Justin Jefferson ran in the 40-yard dash a few years ago. So you're talking about, obviously, a much bigger player than Justin Jefferson running a heck of a 40 time. Byron Young did very well for himself. It's one of those situations where the NFL Combine, I'm with you, don't really care for it all that much, but when you have times like that, that starts to open people's eyes a little bit to the athleticism that Byron Young brings to the table.
Yeah, good for him. That's an awesome time. Doesn't mean anything in a football game because, like, a 40-yard dash for a defensive, like a pass rusher, means nothing. I mean, what's the burst? What's your 10-yard, you know, the shuttle stuff, the change of direction, that stuff, and also then speed to power, playing the position, but we also know he can play. He's a good player. He's a late bloomer. Great guy. He's going to be – teams are going to love him. In the interviews, again, I mean, I wrote about him at Tennessee, working at Dollar General and everything, and he was, like, working at Dollar General, working at Circle K, totally undiscovered, went to a prep school. The prep school folded. Like, his story's crazy, and it's a story of someone who hasn't played as much high-level football as a lot of people who are in this situation. So that stuff and his film and the fact that he can play is way more important, but you know what? You throw an amazing 40 time on there, it still speaks to just an overall – really good athlete, right? So it can't hurt him. It'll help him.
Need to chase somebody down from behind, he can probably catch up.
Well, that's true. I mean, as far as, like, if you got a downfield situation, if he's going to put that 40 time to use on a particular play,
sure. If he recovers a fumble, be hard to catch him. That's true going too. The other way. I mean,
I'm just saying. Yeah, you're right. You're right. There's times we use the 40 times.
Might be able to use it every now and then. There's another guy that we started to talk about as Tennessee season this past year was moving on and things were looking really good. That's generating a lot of attention, and that's Darnell Wright at right tackle for the Vols. And obviously, I was looking at mock drafts earlier this week, and Kiper has him at 16 going to the Washington Commanders. So you're talking about a guy that at one point played left tackle at Tennessee, and I would describe it as okay. He's okay at left tackle. They move him over to right tackle, and obviously that has been a much better fit for him, and that is the position that he's going to play in the NFL is right tackle. If you would have told me, I don't know, a year or two ago that Darnell Wright was going to be a first-round pick, I'd be like, really? Darnell Wright? But you talk about somebody that's done well for himself over the past year. Like, it's looking like Darnell Wright's going to end up being a first-round pick at a right tackle spot in the National Football League.
Yeah, and I think he should be. He was consistently really good this year. That's his spot, like you said. And, look, the left tackle is more valuable in this league, but he's, right tackle's going the first round, as we know. And he should, and I think the Will Anderson game, the Alabama game, was huge for him. Well, I couldn't believe it when I went back through that game, how comfortable Tennessee was. And I know the ball's out fast a lot, and the tempo creates problems for the defense, but that was a whole bunch of, Darnell, Will Anderson, there you go. He's a top five pick in the draft. Handle him, and he did. So I think Tennessee, you think about, right? I mean, does Young move up into like a second round kind of guy with a great combine? I mean, it could happen. Hyatt could be a first rounder, but I think pretty good bet of a second rounder. And then I think Hooker is going to be. I mean, that's a really nice draft class for Tennessee as it tries to kind of capitalize off player development and getting back to churning out pros like it used to.
That's the thing. Like, could Hendon Hooker? I don't think this will happen. But could Hendon Hooker be the last guy of the Tennessee players taken in this draft? Like with Byron Young, where is that going to elevate him to? I still think he's not a first-round pick. He'll probably be somewhere in the second, third round. But like Tillman, where is he going to end up? He's speaking right now at the Combine. You mentioned Hyatt, maybe late first round, maybe early second round. Like where is all this going to line up in terms of where Hendon Hooker gets selected with the injury, obviously, of course, being a factor with him? I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think it'd be disappointing for Hooker because Tillman, I think Tillman's really good. I'll be interested to see if Tillman is running. I don't even know exactly where he is.
I think he's going to run.
He is going to run. If he runs well, then with his size and his production, yeah, he's a really – I mean, honestly, I could make the case, like just looking at the Titans. I mean, I think the speed of Hyatt is very appealing. But if you were choosing between those two, I could make a case for the Titans to look at Tillman as more a guy who would fit what they want to do. It doesn't really change their speed element as much. But if he runs well, then, yeah, it's going to be interesting with him.
Well, our buddy Buck Rising from A to Z Sports is up there, and Cedric Tillman's talking right now. And he was talking about, the competing with Jalen Hyatt this week. And his quote was, quote, "I know you guys don't think I can run, but I can." This was Cedric Tillman. That's what Buck put out there.
That sounds like the Bulldogs saying everybody's picking them to go 5-7.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, which people said Cedric Tillman can't run.
Has weirdly continued this week. Like Nolan Smith from Georgia got up there and said, "We do more with less at Georgia." Like, really? Do you?
Okay. He did not say that.
I'm just telling you what he said.
We do more with less. Just a bunch of scrappers and grinders here at Georgia. We only get 17 5-stars in every recruiting
class.
Kirby
should be coach of the year. For no other reason than just convincing these people that apparently they're just giant underdogs.
And, of course, Bruce Pearl.
Yeah, well, that too.
Is he trying to tell them, like, recruiting's actually done on a 10-star scale? You're only a 5-star, man. Are you going to take that disrespect?
We do more with less.
That's amazing.
Just incredible stuff that Georgia continues to sell out there. But, I don't know, like, the Hyatt part of this is interesting. Like the receiving draft as a whole, is there a run that starts? Like we've seen runs on receivers the last 2-3 years in the draft for sure. Is there a receiving run that starts this year that forces Hyatt to go a little higher? I don't know. I mean, it's like I think he's I think he's a borderline first, second round guy. The speed is incredibly intriguing with him. I share concerns that some people have of, all right, the physicality in the NFL. Can he handle press coverage? Can he handle those things? I do think he needs to get a little bit bigger. But the speed is like the part of his game that he brings to the table that can be impactful right away. Like, he has got serious NFL quality speed, and I think he can help a team right away with that.
I do too, and I think with him, look, he improved so much. He obviously kind of had that lost year, you know, in the first year of Heupel. And I think his response to that and all the improvements he made in every aspect of being a receiver, it's not like he just went out there and just ran go routes.
Right.
Sometimes he did. And he's blew by
Alabama
people.
Game, but yeah.
Yeah, well, right. But he went over. He also made contested catches. He went over the middle. So, you know, he did different things. And then when you pair that with just talking to him last year and everything and kind of how the light went on for him, I would buy that stock. He's going to have to get into a strength program for sure, and he needs to add weight. But I think he's got a chance to be very good. And this idea, I get it. You haven't been able to see him much against press coverage, but I think that he could be a real value. And I think you bring up a good point, because there could be a run. There's a whole bunch of second-tier guys.
Yep.
Now, the first-tier guys, we've been used to seeing at that position in the last few years, it's not like that. But once you start with one or two, all of a sudden you could see absolutely right. If Hyatt snuck into the bottom of the first round, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
On the mock draft front, a lot of Paris Johnson Jr. to the Titans. That's probably the most popular name that I've seen, is the left tackle from Ohio State, Paris Johnson Jr.
Well, hey, it's better than the mock drafts last year that had him taking an inside linebacker.
Yes.
You know, so and that certainly could happen. People seem to think that Peter Skoronski from Northwestern will be gone by then.
Yeah.
Speaking of running, shout out to a friend of the show, Pat Narduzzi, and a guy that we talked about a lot, Kalijah Kancey.
Yep.
He ran the fastest time by a defensive tackle since 2006. What was the number? 4.67. So there you go.
Narduz.
The dude. I credit Narduzzi's coaching. Fantastic coaching, Pat. But
yeah, some of the numbers he put up were comparable to one Aaron Donald, who also
played at Pittsburgh, by the
just
way.
Just saying.
Kalijah Kancey, I don't know. I don't know if he's not going to be that, okay?
No.
But he is really good. He is really good, so good for him. But, again, it's like, you know, you can do these things, but what does the tape say? I'm with Dan Campbell on this.
Yeah, don't worry about the pajamas. Just worry about the tape.
That's right.
Anytime we get Dan Campbell speaking on the situation, it's a win for all of us. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 745 here on the program. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025, 1063, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
You know, obviously they made some plays. We had a hard time staying in front of them at the end of the day. I'm just sick and tired of our guys getting smashed down there. Smashed! We'll get ready to play Tennessee. We were incredibly outmanned at the end. Had four guys on the bench in foul trouble. Joke!
Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl joining us.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Joe, as you said, Bruce Pearl setting the standard for rants a couple days ago in the immediate aftermath of the Alabama-Auburn game the other day. Still my favorite part of this college basketball season is that right there.
When is that going to get old?
Never.
That will be a Rex Rant intro for a very long time.
That is just so good.
I don't know what I like better, him just yelling about getting smashed down there or the joke at the end of it in the walk-off. I don't know. They're both good.
I think the smash is a little bit better just because it's so
0-60.
Like, by the time, and if you listen to the whole thing, by the time he got to the joke, you knew that, like, you're on alert, right? You're ready. But when he first, he's just like, man, it's smash! It's like, whoa! You know, like the initial shock of it is
all right, Bruce.
The video stream is the best, though, because you can see the live stream camera jolt when he throws the headphones.
Oh, yeah. Did you see someone else had a video that was a better video of it?
No.
I think I saw it was like an Alabama fan account, but there is actually a video from a different angle of you can see him doing it.
It's, oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I need to see the facials.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it for you. He just takes it, throws his thing down, and just storms off. It's amazing. And the Alabama fans get to see that, too. It's like at Alabama, so they get to experience that with him.
It's pretty expensive equipment there, Bruce. Be careful throwing that stuff around.
Yeah.
Just saying.
It's a good point. And hopefully you could hear him both ears. With those headphones.
Well, hopefully so.
All right, so listen, this is my rant today. I'm not happy about In-N-Out Burger coming here, okay?
Okay.
In-N-Out
it's
Burger.
It's coming here?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. You did not know? Yes, there's both headquarters and also restaurants will be here 2026, so it's a while. So here's my thing. I love In-N-Out Burger with all my heart, okay? And I get angry when people try to compare other burger fast food chains to In-N-Out Burger. I think they're out of their freaking minds. If you go to In-N-Out Burger and you get a double single, that's two patties, one cheese, don't over-cheese it, animal style, that's the secret menu,
yes.
Grilled onions, also with chilies, that's very important. You order that burger and tell me it's not the best fast food burger you've ever had. I think you're lying to me. But here's the problem. I used to live in the Midwest. I used to crave Chick-fil-A.
Yep.
So whenever my work or whatever brought me south and I was able to go to a Chick-fil-A, I would go nuts. It was so exciting. And then they started to spread all over the place. And then, of course, we moved here.
Yep.
And it's just...
There's access all the time.
I mean, it's just like
and you probably rarely eat it now.
It's like Eddie Murphy. Huh? It's just some regular old crackers. shout out to Gen X who knows what I'm talking about. So this is what's going to happen with In-N-Out Burger. It's exciting to go to California or Arizona. Like I know the one that's in Tempe, Arizona. Like it's like I've been there a few times, and there's a one right at LAX. Like it's exciting. You get in there right away. You got to get In-N-Out Burger. Yeah, once it's here, it's whatever. I want the novelty. Like some things that are regional to me should just stay that way. And I understand it's business; you have a chance to make money. But that was kind of the appeal of In-N-Out Burger. Like it's only out there.
Yeah,
and it's coming here, and I'm not excited. Sorry,
first time I ever had it.
I'm going to eat it less.
Texas, that's the first time I had it. Texas outside.
I didn't
Dallas.
Realize that it was in Texas.
It's in Dallas. Where,
is it?
Yeah.
I they have everything that. In Dallas. Yep. I agree, though. It's like Portillo's. Like, whenever I go to Illinois or Chicago, a must.
Right.
Or Skyline.
Right. Yeah. And so there's something to that, too. It's different, but sometimes I will go buy some cans and make Skyline at home, and it's good.
Not the same.
It's not like being in Cincinnati and having it in a restaurant. So
I agree. Like, the appeal... Like, part of my fear, like I've always said, I would love for a Skyline Chili to just come here so I could eat it more. But I have thought about this before. Of like, is part of why I like it so much the fact that I can only have it every once in a while?
Yes.
Could be.
Yes. And plus, if Skyline was here, I mean, you can take another couple years off my life.
Yeah, it'd not be good.
Well, I mean, that's a... Although I say that, and then this is what would happen, is that I would just be less interested.
Well, what's going to bother me is because I can already see this happening. Like, there will be, when In-N-Out Burger comes here, like, I will be excited about it, and I will be looking forward to going and getting it. But the same thing that happens when anything new pops up around here will also happen. It will be so difficult to get into that it will bother me, and I just won't go. Like, that's what will happen. Like, I remember when... Like Whataburger started to pop up around here, and I'm not a big Whataburger guy. I think it's all right, but Whataburger started.
The people
to pop-
who try to compare that in and out,
I think you're reaching a little bit. But like when they first started popping up around here, like people were waiting in line for like 2.5 hours just to go get the Whataburger. And I'm like, man, I don't know what y'all are doing. I'm not doing. I was telling you like the Morgan Wallen thing yesterday. There were people just standing in the street waiting for free tickets to a Morgan Wallen concert. Like, I don't stand in line for anything. Yes, I am that bougie. If I have to stand in line for something, odds are I'm not doing it. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Do you hate amusement parks?
No, but I have found...
That's, you know, that's...
Yeah, but I've found some ways to...
Fast pass.
Violence?
Yeah, sometimes.
No, you buy the fast pass. It is the best money spent.
No, I agree. Fast passes are good, but even fast passes sometimes, you know, aren't... Like, it's not like you have
it's
no
not immediate.
Line. Yeah. That's the thing. If everybody does a fast pass, you have... It's like sometimes you go to the airport and the, whatchamacallit, another word that's eluding
TSA,
my brain.
TSA, pre-check.
Thank you. God. Like sometimes that line is longer than the regular line.
Yeah. Zach on the text line says, it's like the long distance girlfriend. The allure is half the enjoyment. It's from Zach on the text line, referring to In-N-Out Burger coming here. Thank you, Zach.
Oh, man.
A lot of interesting thoughts
on the text.
I hadn't
thought
of
it in those terms.
A lot of people now were getting into an In-N-Out Burger sucks.
Of course. I get
debate
it.
On the text line.
And this is another thing. And you know what? This goes back to, I remember some of my friends, like I used to be known like on the Michigan State beat for like Mr. Chick-fil-A. Like, oh, we got to go to Chick-fil-A. And I'd take people, they'd be like, okay. I mean, it's, and I'm like, dude, I didn't tell you this is like filet mignon, okay? It's fast food.
Exactly.
I mean, you got to keep it in the context of fast food. So I'm not saying In-N-Out Burger is the greatest burger that could ever be created on earth. There's better burgers here in Nashville at places that aren't fast food places.
Right.
You would know. You did the burger tour.
I did. I can do the whole list for you guys if you'd like. No free ads, though. But as a fast food burger... You guys are, I mean, come on. And again, don't judge them until you do my order. Double single, animal style, Chili's.
I'm thinking about this. I've only had In-N-Out Burger twice in my life, now that I'm thinking about it. Both of them in Dallas, but those are the only two times I've ever had it.
And you were a fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
It's good. Like, my experience is they all, like, their lettuce is always, somehow.
Elite lettuce.
Tomatoes. Yeah, like, it's very crisp and fresh, and that matters.
Yes. They can also do a lettuce wrap burger right. It actually tastes fine. I mean, not as good as a normal burger, but if you're trying to be healthy.
Which is, what is that style? That's a secret menu term.
Yeah.
I have no
idea. Paleo style or something like that?
Sure.
I don't know. Sure.
Kathy on the text line says, my first stop in L.A. is the In-N-Out, and at the Winter Classic in Dallas, I made the Uber driver drive through the In-N-Out on the way to the airport. That's dedication, Kathy.
There you go, Kathy.
Power move.
I, too, went to the In-N-Out in Dallas down there at the Winter Classic.
Yeah, I mean, I
could have been there at the same time.
I did not realize that it had crept that far east.
George in Bellevue says, Coors beer used to be regional, and everyone craved it, and now that it's national, nobody cares. That's what I'm saying.
People crave
Coors. I'm not
Coors.
Old enough to remember Coors not being everywhere.
I'm certainly not old enough to do that.
Yeah. Glenn from Greenbrier, number one burger at Sonic, just as good, if not better, than In-N-Out Whataburger. I agree with that compared to one of those two, but not In-N-Out.
So no excitement from you whatsoever. Do you think by the time 2026 rolls around that there will be at least a little bit of excitement that you're looking forward to with this?
I mean, I'm even like – honestly, I'm going to go. The next time I'm somewhere where they have it, I'm going to still go. But I'm already less excited about that now because I know it's coming here. It's kind of ruined everything. I'm sad.
Well, I mean, look, we had somebody bring it up on the text line. Like, Buc-ee's is in Tennessee now. We're getting a lot of stuff, man.
We're getting everything.
We're getting a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So what do we do about that? Like, is it going to ruin your enjoyment to everything?
No.
Are
I
you going to have to move?
I'll still do it, you know? Like, I'll still eat it. It's fine. I have to find something else that's, well, I'll tell you what, and I've already had a rant about the corned beef hash.
You have.
But, you know, it's like Ruby Slipper New Orleans. You know, we've got those here now.
That's true.
And I like them. But when it was only in New Orleans, oh,
it's different.
Yes.
It's part of the allure going down there. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on today's Rex Rant on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, we are usually joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. Bit of a scheduling conflict today, so we'll catch up with TD again next week. But TD did have a very interesting thought and idea that the Titans could pursue as they look ahead at the NFL draft at the quarterback position. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.